Sayadaw, the topic of today's talk is mindfulness and emotional management in daily life. So I was sharing with the audience earlier that the interesting thing is that you will be able to show us how it is, you know, modern psychology can be combined with ageless Buddhist teachings. So may I request for the Dharma sharing, please?
I didn't plan to come in a wheelchair. But I take this as a good opportunity to look at myself and to relate to other people. So this evening, for mindfulness and emotion management, I like to focus on what has happened to me yesterday, the fall that I had in the Botanic Garden. I was taken to the emergency service. So I like to focus on emergency service and emergency resources. The focus is, how often do we use our emergency resources, and is it necessary that we use them? If you use your emergency resources, you use up more of your physical and mental energy at the maximum level. I'm sure we have many medical professions here. At the emergency level, your liver, your heart, your lung, they pump up more blood. You use up more of your energy, your oxygen, your blood. Why we do that? Because we think it's an emergency case. Consider a meeting between a prey, like a deer, and a predator, a lion or a tiger, in an African safari, maybe like Serengeti, like in Kenya, Amboseli, in South Africa, Kruger Park, like this. You know, when the prey and the predator meet, what happens? For the prey, it's a life and death situation. Like Charles Darwin says, life and death situation is what we call survival instinct. The survival instinct we kick in. And we will straight away go into emergency response. That's automatic. We call this fight or flight. A deer, if it can escape the predator, it will use up all its energy and trying to run away. Trying to run away from the predator. It's a matter of life and death. If the deer thinks that it cannot escape, then the deer, okay, will fight back using more aggression, all the aggression that it has to fight back, to fight and flight. Flight means to run away. But for animals, in the animal kingdoms, okay, once you have escaped from a predator, what you do? You can switch of the emergency response and you return to the normal, to the normal response, to the normal situation. A deer will start eating the green grass straight away. Can we do that as a human being? We are too clever to do that. You go to work, somebody didn't say hello to you in the morning, and you start thinking in your mind, maybe this person has something in mind against me. The whole day, okay, you don't realize actually you have gone into an emergency mode. You are tense. You go home, you are still in emergency mode. Your family at home is waiting for you with hot food to have dinner together, but your mind is still in the office. You can't switch that off and start eating the green grass like a deer in the animal kingdom. It's in the same way. If you have a difficult time at home, you go to work, you take this emergency mode with you. A social psychologist from New York University has done a research about operation, something that patients have to make a decision all the time in the hospital. Two groups of people, okay, they are given different information. One of them given an information that, okay, this particular operation technique, okay, has 70% success rate, 70%. The second group is told that this particular operation technique has a 30% failure rate. Okay, one is 70% success rate, the other is 30%. The 30%, the second group, they go straight into a negative mood. They don't want to go for operation. And the first group, they are very happy. Wow, 70% success rate. Very good. Then in the second phase, the first group is told 70% success rate means there is a 30% failure rate. Now, the positive attitude changes straight away. Now they don't want to do operation anymore. The second group, who were first given the negative information, 30% failure rate. Now we give them, well, actually, there is still 70% success rate. More than double of the failure rate. But they don't change their attitude. They stick to the negative attitude. Why? Because survival instinct means, you know, we care so much about our survival. And if you say something negative, it got stuck in my mind very easily. 10 people come up and say, wow, Seattle, your talk is wonderful. But just one person comes up, I don't know what you talk about, it's all rubbish. That one person is going to get stuck in my mind. This is what we call negative biased. We are negative biased. Half full and half empty. We always see half empty. But this is if we leave our emotion unmanaged. If we leave it as it is. The Buddha says, we can change ourselves, we can train ourselves. All the Buddha teaches is training. Ethical training, sila sikha. To train how to live, how to relate to people. Psychological training, samadhi sikha, how to calm our mind, how to calm our emotion. Banya sikha, how to train our worldview, how we look at the world. That means Buddhism believes everything can be trained. The two groups that New York University did research on, okay, they were not trained in emotion. They just represent average people everywhere in America, in Europe, here in Singapore, in other parts of the world. It's just like that. I've been talking a lot about this in three sessions tomorrow. But today, I just like to focus on the emergency response. At home, we have to check ourselves from time to time. Am I in emergency mode? Am I using up a lot of my energy? Yesterday in the morning, I was walking. I was having a nice walk, very nice walk in the Botanic Garden. And we were going down to the pond near the shore foundation to feed fish. I knew the grass, okay, was slippery. So I took off my shoes and I walked very carefully. I fell down twice. I fell down. The second time, I broke my, I mean, I fractured my ankle. I had to immediately look at my mind, how my mind was reacting. Okay, was I using a lot of automatic thought, automatic reaction, emergency reaction? If I do so, I'm going to get exhausted very soon. Before I reach the hospital, I'm going to get exhausted mentally. When you are exhausted, that means inside you, you don't have good immunity. You can get affected easily. You talk about this in emotional tone. That means you can be affected by anything happening around you. I can start blaming my assistants, or they can start blaming me, they can start blaming themselves, I can start blaming myself. Very easy. The Buddha says, whenever we are in emergency mode, automatically, we are blaming. When we blame other people, we are saying that we are right. It's self-righteous, self-justification. This is self-indulgence. That if we don't blame other people, we start blaming ourselves. I shouldn't have gone there. Maybe something like that. And everything, every blame comes from subconscious mind. Subconscious mind. Subconscious mind cannot distinguish between positive and negative emotion. In Abhidhamma, we call this Abhyagata in Pali. Abhyagata means something that you cannot describe either as wholesome or unwholesome. Meaning, the subconscious mind cannot distinguish between good and bad, between wholesome and unwholesome. And the subconscious mind, what it does is to maintain the momentum of life. So, by breathing normally, by checking, like the muscles around my face, around my forehead, if they are tense, then it means that I'm in emergency mode. I need to bring awareness to myself and breathe in and out slow and gentle. Slow and gentle. If I do that, I'm preserving my energy. I'm preserving my energy. The energy is not going downhill, it's not draining. Instead, it's being contained, it's being sustained. It's about acceptance. Acceptance. Yesterday, in the hospital, I was given a jab, that's painkiller. And I was also prescribed two kinds of painkiller, you know, paracetamol and another one. I took them yesterday, but today I have not taken them. I would like to feel the pain. I would like to feel the pain. If I feel the pain, I'd like to know if my mind would go into emergency mode. I'd like to have a relationship to, I mean, to a connection with the pain. This is my food. I cannot start looking at this as something horrible. So I need to look at this pain as my baby, as my child, my only and one child. So last night before I went to bed, I talked to my food, okay? I told the pain, are you okay? Are you okay? When I talk to the pain, are you okay? Now, there is no tension. The muscles are not tense. If the muscles are tense, you know the muscles are using maximum energy, maximum blood, maximum oxygen. So the Buddha says, to be aware of pain as pain. To be aware of pain as pain, to be aware of the absence of pain as the absence of pain. What does it mean? Usually, when we are aware of pain, we start judging the pain straight away. We think the pain is bad, I shouldn't have this. You know, I shouldn't have this pain. And all sorts of, you know, judgment will go on. We have a lot of prejudice towards pain. You mention the word pain, we only see negative things. This is prejudice. In the hospital, very often you are asked to press 1 to 10, okay, which level, to indicate the level of your pain. And I was aware yesterday, in addition to the physical pain, I mean, when you are in a physical pain, you can easily go into emergency mode and you can become grumpy. You can get irritated easily. So the hospital has a screen to tell you. The first procedure is X-ray. The second one is a lab test. The third one is medical consultation with a doctor. And the fourth one is treatment. And so that you know where you are, and they warn you, sometimes it may take longer. That's an emotion management for the patient. So that the patient knows that it can take, and it may take time. The physical pain is here. You cannot take away from this because the bone is fractured. But how much pain you are in, this is very judgmental, a very judgmental question. If you have to press 1 to 10, mostly we press, I mean, based on our emotional judgment. And the doctor gives you, if you press the higher number, the doctor gives you a stronger painkiller. Usually, I tell meditators during the retreat that within 1 hour, the pain that you experience, you don't need painkiller. You don't need painkiller for that. If you train yourself, you can sit a lot longer. But the thing is that as soon as we become aware of pain, there is a habitual reaction. In that habitual reaction, we have a negative attitude towards the pain. We either fight with the pain or we run away from the pain. The pain is not life and death matter, especially in meditation. In 30 minutes, 1 hour meditation, it's not a life and death matter. But we treat that as a life and death situation. We go straight into the maximum level of response. What happens when you're fighting with the pain, with the physical pain? You are topping up the psychological pain, the emotional pain. There's a top up. And we don't know how much is the top up pain, how much is the original pain. That is why I decided this morning, I think I have a choice to take or not to take the painkiller. I have the painkiller with me. If I can bear with that, then I might take it. But so far, with your support, I'm okay. In the school, children sometimes, they go into the emergency mode very easily. If somebody has something new and you don't have it, you feel left out. That's what we call peer pressure. Okay, you want to have it. Unless you can have it, you can't concentrate on your lessons. And somebody says that, okay, last weekend, okay, we went to somebody's birthday, okay, in the class. If you're not invited, how do you feel? You feel very insecure. You go straight into emergency mode. You feel tense. Your teacher is very good, but you don't see the good thing about your teacher anymore. Okay. Your school is very good, but you don't see the beauty of your school anymore. There are many people in the class who are very good to you, but you don't see them. You only remember somebody who doesn't invite you to his birthday. Only that person. See? So now, whatever you do, that person is your focus. Meaning, your emotion becomes negative. You go to school with negative emotion. You go home with negative emotion, like this. This can happen at work. This can happen when you drive and you're at the traffic light. I usually call this red zone and green zone. Green zone is the normal zone. A red zone is the emergency zone. So we have to check all the time if we are already in the red zone. Then we use mindfulness to accept it. Don't blame yourself for being in the red zone. Just register that, learn from that, recognize that, and relax. You can train your mind not to go into emergency mode easily. This evening, I'd like to invite you to join me in practice, maybe for about 10-15 minutes. The first thing is to take slow and deep breathing, deep and slow breathing. Sit comfortably, okay? Sit comfortably. And as you breathe in and out, slow and gentle, you can feel some of the muscles around your face, around your forehead, around your cheeks, your chin. If they are tense, your shoulders, if they are tense, if you find the muscles tense, don't fight with them, and don't ignore them either. No need to use emergency resources to deal with them. Simply regard the tension as your only child. Are you okay? As if you are talking to your child who is crying, who is being tense. Are you okay, darling? Breathe in and out, slow and gentle. It's important to have nice breathing. During the day, we breathe about 20,000 times. How many times we breathe properly, supplying enough oxygen to our lung, to our body. If 200 times, that's a very small percent. Slow and deep breathing. If you just come from work, if physically you are tired, the muscles are tense, and then look at those tense muscles as your child. It's okay. Reassure yourself. It's okay to feel tired. No need to fight with this tiredness, and no need to run away from this either. No fight or flight. Breathing in and out, slow and gentle, deep breathing. And then think of your day from the morning up to now. In the school, was there any tension when you talk to your teachers, when you talk to your friends, when you do your work? Was there any tension, any insecure feeling? Any like and dislike, especially dislike? Is there any such feeling? If you find that, simply register that this is dislike, that's dislike, that's dislike. Don't personalize it. No need to fight with that dislike. No need to run away from that either. Usually we personalize dislike. We either blame someone else or we blame ourselves. So without doing that, we are changing our emotional habit. The way we manage our emotion, we simply recognize tension, the emotion of dislike, the insecure feeling. Worry, anxiety. At work, at home, during the commuting time to work, was there any emotion that drives your response into emergency mode? If you are thinking about what to do tomorrow, next week, if there is an automatic thought, usually that takes you into a very high level response, meaning you are using up a lot of your energy more than you should. So automatic thinking about the future, you've got to recognize that as well. Look at that wandering mind, that auto mind, as your child. Not as your enemy that you need to get rid of. There must be an attitude of metta. Once again, check the muscles around your face, around your ears, around your shoulders if they are tense, because you have to rush to be in time for the talk. Slow and deep breathing. Slow and deep breathing. Slow and deep breathing. Revisit in the near past your own experiences. Maybe a tense meeting with someone. Maybe a tense meeting in the company, at work, in the social organization, where opinions differ. When you hear that, automatically do you go into the emergency mode? Fight and flight. In that situation, we all become very closed. We close ourselves. We are not open anymore. You look at the buffaloes in Africa. When they are scared, when they are in emergency mode, they just run and they don't care about their fellow buffalo. They stampede on each other. But when they are not in emergency mode, they actually look after each other. They save each other from the lion's jaw. Being in the green zone, you have more courage. Your heart is more spacious, not just for yourself, but for others as well. Just revisit one of the scenarios in the past where you went into emergency mode because of disagreement with someone, with a group of people, and how the mind started personalizing issues. Simply register the emotion as they are. Release them, return to Slow and deep breathing. Slow and deep breathing. Now, once again, you can check your physical body, if your muscles are tense from your head to your face, your shoulders, even your fingers, if they are tense. Slow and deep breathing, relax them. Okay, you can open your eyes now. This is a short practice. It's not enough, but I hope you get something out of this. I'd like to go back to the pain that I have. The pain, usually, as I mentioned, we look at the pain from purely negative point of view. We don't like it. In all the languages, 4 or 5, that I know, but when people speak about pain, they are already negative. But without pain, how do we know to take care of our body? How do we know when to eat? Okay, how do we know when to stop eating? How do we know that we have sat for too long, now we need to get up and have a walk? How do we know? It's only pain. Pain is a message. Don't fight with the messenger. But every time that pain arises, if we go into emergency mode and try to fight with it because we have a very fixed view, preconceived notion, any pain is bad if we live in that frame of thought. You go easily into emergency mode. So it's important to make friends with pain. To be friend with pain. My tissue, they don't want to be in pain. Okay. My muscle, they don't want to be in pain. So I have to talk to them, are you okay? But the pain has a reason. Has a reason. There's a reason that there is pain in my foot, my left foot. So listening to this pain calmly is part of emotion management, a very important part of emotion management. You know, sometimes, I mean, because everything is very established here in Singapore, everything is very quick, people lose the ability to tolerate over a course of meal, just one meal. How many times you go into emergency mode? Because it's too much salt, it's too much chili, not enough chili, because of this, because of that. Or just one meal, okay? You get fed up with one meal, and then you move to another one. Because so one thing good about Europe is that they eat just one dish, one at a time. A starter, just one. Soup, just one. Before you finish your soup, okay, nothing else will come. So you have no choice. So you are forced to live with this. But in Asia, especially in Southeast Asia, we have many dishes. You start eating one dish. After a few bites, you start getting fed up with this. You become disinterested in this. You divert your attention to the other dish. You are not aware of this. It becomes a habit, second nature. The second dish, you can't stay with that long either. After a few bites, you have to move to a third one. So you are running away. You are running away from your own restlessness, from your own dislike of a certain dish. Fight and flight. Okay, that's the emergency mode. Even in eating, you're having this. So the Buddha says, we need to to take care of ourselves as if, okay, we only have one child, we dedicate all our energy to this child. At the moment, the pain in my left foot is my only child. I shouldn't be fighting with this. And to run away from this, okay, by listening to, by watching television, by listening to radios, by reading books, I might be running away from that. By doing that, actually, I'm using up more of my energy. And I'm going to get exhausted by doing that. So I just want you to take one question today. I have no answer. Just take one question. Am I in emergency? Am I using my emergency resources for the right reason? If it's not life and death situation, we are overusing our energy. I was very grateful to the ambulance that came to take me yesterday. At the back, I noticed a non-emergency ambulance. What? It reminded me about mindfulness, not to go into emergency mode. Very important. Simply your neighbors, okay, were a little bit not mindful and made some noises. And if you go straight into the emergency mode, what will happen? You will go into emergency mode all the time because you are into the habit. So, at Oxford, the education system is that the answer is not important. To ask the right question is the most important, more important than giving the right answer. So today, the right question that I'd like to ask is, are we using our emergency resources correctly? Thank you. Any question? I've got three questions here, maybe more coming. They're interesting. But some of them, they will be answered automatically during the course of one or two sessions tomorrow. The first question, may I know who is the irritating one? Is it you or me? If we ask the wrong question, we get the wrong answer. The answer is always led by the question. That is why sometimes the Buddha says, okay, without answering the question straight, the Buddha asks another question to clarify the question. Sometimes he just keeps silence. He didn't answer the question. Sometimes he answers straight. Who is the irritating one? Now we are looking at the irritating situation as you and me. I cause you to be irritated, or you cause me to be irritated. What the Buddha is saying is that in human history, we always look at things like that. As you irritating me and me irritating you. You know, we personalize it. But in irritation, there's no me, there's no you. Because when you feel irritation, the quality of your irritation is just exactly like my irritation. You don't own the irritation. If we don't look at the irritation properly, what will happen is that we are going to cling to this irritating situation. We are not able to let go. How to let go, how to deal with this, the second question, how to deal with those we cannot avoid, demanding boss or nasty relatives, as an example here. I'm going to be talking about this tomorrow, but today is the foundation. That is to recognize our emotion, what happens. To recognize that. If we recognize that from the subconscious mind, okay, we come to the conscious mind. The conscious mind has reasoning, has mindfulness, has awareness, but the subconscious mind has none of that. So what we train ourselves in a very brief session, in a very brief sitting today is to bring ourselves out of the subconscious mind into the conscious level. This is irritation. To look at irritation as an impersonal element. Whether your boss is irritated or you're irritated, that irritation is the same. Then, if you cannot avoid them, now I'm jumping, you know, what I'm going to say tomorrow. If you can avoid them, the first you can do is not to go into the emergency mode. Instead, to preserve your energy and to deal with the situation properly. If it's a difficult situation, you have two choices. One is to get irritated and angry. The other is to feel compassionate. To feel compassionate for yourself for being in this situation. to feel compassionate for your boss for being like that, for not being a lovely person, for not being a lovely boss. We talk more about that tomorrow. And number three, Sarah, how do I let go of emotional pain, being abandoned by someone I love? Well, I don't have this experience, so I can't say. One monk from Burma, Sarah Oshinsekinda, tells one of her students, someone has abandoned you. Only one person. This person doesn't like you anymore, but you keep thinking about this person. There are many people out there who like you, and you don't want to think about them. That is why you suffer. Ajahn Brahm usually says his analogy, one brick and 999 bricks. You keep thinking about one brick. This is about emotional problem. By thinking about one brick, you go into the emergency mode. It has its own energy, so you cannot come out of that easily. So the first thing is to use mindfulness to recognize that, okay, now I am multiplying this one brick. Somebody who doesn't like you, just one person. Now, because you keep thinking about this person very often, now you have many people who don't like you. You feel like that, as if the whole world doesn't like you. We need to look into our heart and what are the emotions that we experience. Is it insecure feeling? Is it anger? Is it disappointment? Is it low esteem? So we just need to pinpoint that emotion. And you register that emotion a few times and train your mind to let go. Train your mind to accept and train your mind to let go. If you don't train your mind to let go, the mind wouldn't know how to let go. How do I help a person who is close to you and always in emergency mode? The first thing is to make sure that you don't go into emergency mode. And to look at this person as your only child. Like your child, sometimes your child, your only child is being difficult. You give some food, the child doesn't want it. You want to go, you want to take your child somewhere, the child doesn't want to go with you. The child is being difficult sometimes. When that happens, how do you do? What do you do? You have to see the pain in the child's mind, in the child's heart. In the same way, visualize this person, okay? By yourself, visualize this person who is in emergency mode, visualize the person as if he or she is your only child. And trying to feel their pain. Trying to feel their pain. So next time, when you meet them, you will be at ease. And you might just as well influence them. During the Buddha's time, Angulimala, somebody who killed more than 900 people, he was in emergency mode. And everyone who came across him, they also straight away went into emergency mode. They fear. Even the king ran away. An army ran away. The sutta, Angulimala Sutta, described that people go in a group, 20, 30, 40, 50, but they still can't escape Angulimala. Because he was an emergency mode, that's why he was very powerful. And when the Buddha went to meet him, the Buddha was not responding in kind. The Buddha was not in emergency mode, unlike the other victims. That is why Angulimala realized that he was in emergency mode and he came out of that straight away. We have to believe in kindness. We have to believe in mindfulness, that it can transform us, it can transform people. So if we keep ourselves, okay, out of red zone, out of the red zone, the emergency zone, it's likely that we will be able to to protect other peoples as well. One latest research in Africa. You know, the Maasai, the tribe, very often the lions would come and kill their animal, their buffaloes and cow like that. But the lions wouldn't do that if they look at the, if the cows look at them, look at their face straight. Meaning, the predator, they rely on surprise. They rely on surprise factor. When you see the lion hunting, one lion will chase the prey to go into a certain direction, another lion would block the other way, and one lion would be waiting to ambush using surprise factor. Emotion. They are like lions. If they don't have surprise factor, they cannot overpower our mind. When you don't expect that your boss can be difficult, that your relatives can be difficult, that yourself sometimes, your emotion can be up and down. If you don't expect this, you're going to be taken by surprise all the time. You're going to fall prey to your own emotion. So mindfulness, mindfulness. The latest research is that people, they create the eyes, they draw the eyes of a cow or a buffalo, and they put them on the bum of the cow. So when the lions, was trying to hunt those animals, you know, when they saw the artificial eye, they just give up. This is the nature of emotion. Surprise factor is called in Pali avijja or moha. That's ignorance. So if you raise your awareness, if you practice awareness, then there will be no surprise. Then the emotion, negative emotion, they won't be as powerful. What to do if surrounding people are in emergency mode? When do I use emergency resources? The best is to preserve your emergency resources to life and death situation. Emotion is like this. You get caught by surprise, by the predator and you run. So this time you escape. But you have used up a lot of your energy. So it's taking time. You have to take time to recover. To recover your energy. This time you recover. But you are not aware that you are in the jungle. You are not aware. You start to relax. And all of a sudden, wild animals, they come out of nowhere. And you have to run again. At this time, you escape also. But it takes longer for you to recover, physically and mentally. If you have to run for the third time, for the fourth time, on the same day, you're in emergency mode, at the traffic light, at a parking space, at work, and once somebody calls you when you're working, or when somebody doesn't call you when you're expecting, you're in emergency mode many times a day. If that happens, it will take a lot of time for you to recover. If you yourself unconsciously, if you go into emergency mode, emergency resources, you're going to find it difficult to use the people around you who are affected in the same way. Yes, if there's a fire here, yes, we all have to run out. That's emergency mode. But once we are outside, we have to check our emotion. If we are still scared, if there is still fear, okay, we have to check our emotion. If we don't check that, we are going to have emotional hangover. Emotional hangover sometime from school to university, from university to workplace, from one work to another work. Like that. Then, when that happened to us, our heart is not spacious. We are not accommodating. We cannot be generous. We cannot be understanding. So the first is to relate to our own emotion, to connect with yourself. In a way that would bring yourself from the red zone into the green zone, from the emergency zone to the non-emergency zone. To recognize the situation. Once that's done, then we can try to relate to other people's pain and joy. That's what we are going to do tomorrow. We do some exercise. We'll be trying to relate to other people's pain and their strength, their joy, their joyful events, their achievements in their life. By doing that, we are developing our emotion in a positive way. And we are operating in a more conscious manner, in a more mindful manner, and not through our subconscious mind. I think we have run out of all the questions. Oh, you have more? I can talk until morning. I forget that I'm on a wheelchair. News media report about emergencies. Right. separation and to be adversarial. How can we get journalists profession tend to be adversarial? How can we get journalists out of the emergency mode? So we don't feel pessimistic of the future. If you buy their journal, then you support them. If you rate their journal very highly, then you also support them. The way to relate to them is to feel their pain. They are in that profession. They are being paid to be negative. If they are not negative, okay, they can't survive. That's the situation. If you do something good, that's not news. So you have to feel their pain. You have to feel their pain. And try to think of, you know, the positive thing by yourself, in yourself, and in the people around you. The journalists, they write what people like, because the readers like negative things, and they... You completed Sasana degree in 1 year. This is a degree that usually takes 3 years. How do you handle pressure? How did you not use your emergency resources? Well, when I was younger, I used my emergency resources very often. We compete each other. You know, I was studying in Bogor in Burma, and we had mock exam every week. Mock exam, and after, okay, we sit exam, and after maybe 3 or 4 hours, okay, the results is out. And we go and check whether I'm in number one, number two, number three, number four, like that. If somebody you are competing with, okay, is above you, now you go into emergency mode. That happens. That happened. But that didn't happen to me anymore when I went to Oxford. Oxford was a very competitive place. People are very tense. Very tense. You ask them what you're working on, what you're researching on. This question can be very offensive. They don't want to tell you. If you say, how many chapters you have written? Now you are being very nosy. People feel very insecure. So I was asked one day, so how do I cope with it? I said, wow, it's a beautiful place. A beautiful place. I see many wonderful people, many bright people. During my doctoral years, and I have never seen anyone who knew only two languages. Usually more. It's, you know, if you know maybe about three languages, that's very normal. Very normal. My professor knew 8 languages. Equally, he can speak, he can write, he can give a lecture in any of them. So in that situation, you know, if you can rejoice in their knowledge, in their achievement, now you don't feel insecure anymore. When you forget that you live in a wonderful place, there are many people with a lot of achievements, then you tend to go inside, you go inward. And you start competing yourself with other people. Whenever I heard that somebody has completed a PhD, you know. I made a point to rejoice in that. In my meditation, I made a point. Because I knew how difficult it was. And the person now has done that, has completed that. You know, that's something to celebrate. So we have to connect with other people's pain, other people's joy. Sometimes when you think you are having a hard time in the school, at the university, look at other people. When you can share with their pain and you no longer personalize your pain, that's what we call anatta. Anatta means non-personalization. Anatta means sharing. Sharing the pain and sharing joy. It's a very selfless attitude. I'm very impatient. I cannot tolerate people who are slow in their work. How can I overcome this weakness? You have already made a very good start. You know yourself that's impatient. Now, you need to have the right attitude toward this impatient. Don't look at impatient as your enemy. If you look at the impatient as your enemy, you're going into the fighting mode. You're going into emergency mode. And you will start a vicious circle. So what is important is to feel compassionate towards yourself for having impatience. This is important. Most of emotion occur due to our past experiences, which are going to dictate our present or future events. How are we going to get rid of the influence from the past experience? I have given a talk on this, a long talk, about reconciling with our inner child. The inner child is about past experience. We have the past experience within us. If you are agitated with somebody, you hold on to this agitation. That means you're easily going to emergency mode. When you go into emergency mode, because you don't like this agitation, you tend to ignore this agitation. Sometimes by blaming the other person, sometimes by blaming yourself, sometimes by suppressing it. In either case, this irritation, which is a child, is being ignored. And this child is frightened. Because it doesn't get the attention, the warmth, the love it deserves. So the past experiences, all they need is non-judgmental awareness and compassionate attention. Maybe we don't have time anymore. Is until 9:15. Okay. If you say 3 minutes, I go straight into emergency mode. I'm okay. Thank you. You are very kind. Yeah. Should I show pity for people who are not nice? Should I ask them to be nicer? Nicer is a brand from Taiwan. Or should I leave them alone? Is letting go always the best choice? Signature, anonymous. we are going to work on this pity and compassion tomorrow. And I hope you know we can, if you can keep this so that we can talk about this tomorrow. How do we release emotional hangover? When we encounter very nasty, aggressive, emergency mode people, how do we keep calm ourselves? You have to connect with that pain. If you're not connected with that pain, you can go into emergency mode straight away. And this is called Karuna, and we do this tomorrow as well. What should we think in our last moment before we die? I have never experienced this, so I don't know. Ajahn Brahm says that the consciousness on one brick can overwhelm 999. And this is where the practice comes in. Not to go into emergency mode, but to emergency means you ignore the one brick. You don't deal with this properly, emotionally. You don't accept the imperfection. You don't tell yourself it's okay. It's okay. I tell myself it's okay to have pain. It's okay to have pain. It's okay to have broken your foot. It's okay. Otherwise, if you don't reassure your subconscious mind, you can easily go into emergency mode. If we train if we strengthen our conscious mind, with mindful compassion and mindful joy, joyous feeling, that is karuna and mudita. I think consciousness before we die usually reflects the consciousness that we have lived with, the strongest one. If our strongest one is positive thinking, is compassionate thinking, it's likely that before we die, our mind will go to that. You see, some people, they die smiling. Some people, they die screaming. See? A professor of psychology in Sri Lanka, Professor Nandasena, he observed 35 butchers. Those 35 butchers, they die just like the animal they kill. They scream like them. You see? How can one train the mind to let go a betrayal of trust, of being cheated in our relationship, especially if the other party did not think so? One party views it. Okay, now you cross this. I shouldn't read it. Again, I will be talking about this tomorrow. To use pain and joy, these two emotions, they are boundless. They're immeasurable. They can include everyone. Very inclusive. Very inclusive. If you can relate to the pain of someone who has hurt you, who has betrayed, if you can find some pain of that person and relate to that pain, that person's betrayal wouldn't hurt you anymore. This is the way to let go. Some people, they want to let go by having a lot of beer, by having a lot, very strong alcohol, knocking themselves off. How can we maintain mindfulness? Very easy. Mindfulness is the easiest thing in the world, I like to claim these days. You can't really do anything in 10 minutes except mindfulness. But mindfulness, if you practice 10 minutes, you get for 10 minutes. If you invest for 1 hour, you get for 1 hour. But you are going to learn a computer, 10 minutes, you don't learn anything. Engineering, you learn nothing in 10 minutes. Driving, you learn nothing. Arranging flowers, 10 minutes, not enough. Nothing is possible in 10 minutes. Only mindfulness is possible. So ask yourself, okay, how much you have invested in mindfulness? Not you and not me. This question, what the difference between memory, the things in daily life, I don't know, there is in Burmese also, Seropia Myanmar, Mira Pu Aya Pare, the D A Yang count, my Burmese is not very good anymore. I almost go into emergency mode. What is this one? The D-A-Yang count there, and this one? Sula. Sula count there. Ho yenga pikere hari, alungu driyare surane, vipatana bhavana, matam matri ne, kwa chamu shirelu timhare bhaya, era hopa. What is it? being lucky, being and being mindful, what's the connection? Ho yenga pyukere hari alung udriyare surane vipatana bao nama. I think the question now, I'm just guessing. I don't get the question 100%. I just think if the question is, if you remember your past, by simply you remembering your past experience, is this right mindfulness? Is this right mindfulness? The past is the concept that we have in our mind. But the feeling about the past is present. It is happening at the present moment. If you are bitter about your past, about 2002, for example, 14 years ago, 2002 is gone. But the negative emotion, the bitterness is still here, is still current, is still present. You are working on this emotion. That is why it's right mindfulness. You are being mindful of your present thoughts and emotion. If I understand the question correctly, that would be my answer. If I don't understand it correctly, I'm sorry. I hope you don't go into emergency mode. Okay. We are done with all questions.
Bhante, one last... Sayadaw, sorry. Maybe one last question. Just a change of track. This question is regard to Sila. In the five precepts, the fourth one is to refrain from untruthful speech. So the question is, but sometimes we need to say things which are not very truthful. For instance, telling white lie. Like this brother or sister is sharing that sometimes on the phone with the parents who are in Myanmar, he or she has to say that she's fine and well, but actually maybe she's sick. So is it a sin or is it not right to always tell white lies to just comfort the other party? So some thoughts on that, please.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It takes a lot of effort to get our communication right, to make it ethical. I was asked by a professor at Oxford who works on freedom of speech. He has never heard of right speech, but in Buddhism we have right speech. Samavaja. He said, what do you mean? So we spent about 2 hours talking about this. And we also talked about white line. Now, we have to examine our intention and the expression of that intention. Now, you don't want your parents to worry and you tell them that you are okay. You tell them you're okay. because parents, once they have got negative news, and they live with that for a long time. They can't digest that very easily. The intention is good. The intention is good. But you know, it can become a habit. It can become a habit, you know, for ourselves and also other people. And in my case, what I would say is that I would tell them maybe some of the problem, not all the problem. Some of the problem I would tell them, okay, I have this, but I have this answer, I have this solution, so I'm okay. Something like that. That might help them. And of course, by simply avoiding the situation, sometimes it's difficult. But I have faced this situation. My mother was suffering from cancer. And so we had a choice with my brother and sister. Do we tell her or do we not tell her? And one of my teachers also suffered from cancer, and we are looking after him. And do we tell him or not tell him? We try to find out their opinion about cancer, whether they are scared of cancer. So we talk about their friends who have died. And my mother said that one of her friends died from cancer, that she was scared of cancer. So I discussed with my brother and sister, I said, okay, we're not going to tell her that this is cancer. But how to describe cancer without using the word cancer? So that's how I discussed with some physician, some CA consultant, and I described the disease without using the word. And she didn't ask if she was suffering from cancer. And we didn't mention a word. Because of that, okay, she was meditating on the pain, on the cancer pain. The doctor prescribed her morphine. She never used that. She meditated on the pain until the last minute. I'm very proud of her. You see, the thing is that she was scared of cancer, and so we didn't use the word. We didn't use the word, but we tell her something that okay, something is wrong with your blood, with your cell. And everybody is trying their best, you know, to do something for you. So that sort of thing that we talk about. Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much, Sayadaw, for the teachings. Can we put our palms together and say sadhu 3 times in our gratitude towards the teachings as well as answering all the questions very well? Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.